Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to SBPRA Radio. I'm your host, Charles Green. Today we'll be hearing from playwright Joshua Ogbo in a pre-recorded interview done all the way over in England. Let's take a listen.
This conversation is with Joshua Ogbo, the Nigerian playwright and critic, who is clearly the conscience of his generation, talking about his play, Deadwood. Hi, Joshua.
Hello.
Could you please tell us what your play is about?
Sure. Let me begin this conversation by apologizing for my nasal voice this morning after about the cold weather. Having said that, after the Deadwood is set in the Nigerian context. It's typically Nigerian story of its universal appeal. It draws, it's a story that draws our attention to the consequences of tyranny and oppression. The idea was first conceived in 2010 when I was doing my national youth service in Nigeria. And it was interesting. In the northwestern part of Nigeria, where the country shares border with Niger. And when I looked at the kind of oppression that was subjected on the orientation camp, I said, I'm interested in this aspect of our existence. I came around to go in search of why we had a kind of silent child. I came around to wake up, to become the conscience of my own generation, to be wide awake for my own generation to be awake as well, and to apply that to the wider context of my society today. Perhaps as I was coming for the interview this morning, I received sad news from home that the tsunami headsmen are disappearing, invading my state, Benue State, Nigeria, killing people over grazing land, killing people, keep taking away their lives and property. They do not take it truly. And the president is there. Nobody's talking about that gross injustice. They want us to talk against human rights in my country today. So I was writing about Afghan world. And if you like, the kind of, I was doing the kind of reenactment of the death of a nation. So, what you come to see today was what I thought of years back. And not many people could see that way, that the country was heading for a collapse. So, in the narrative, you have characters like Majike, you have Adogai, you have Masibi. So, when you read about his character, you see that Majike, his role in the play, shows that he is the savior, the conscience of his nation, if you like. For characters like Nasiri, Adoga, are people who want to go to flow the tide, the corrupt practices in Nigeria. But Nadine keeps telling them, you don't have to do that. You don't have to be this way. You don't have to flow with the majority, the corrupt people. So it keeps reminding them of their role in nation duty. And the country is heading for a collapse. Is that your contribution to a dying world? Is that how you are going to watch for your own country to die? What are you going to do to save this country from further collapse, from this mess? It is a tragedy that goes deeply into the human conscience. Why can't you pause for a moment to reflect on what you do to save this country? So we see, we read about instances of no injustice, where the law becomes a product of class and ideology. The law in our context has two eyes, but one is blind. And people have, corrupt people have another blind eye to commit all kinds of crimes and all of that and to get away with them. Why? Because the law has deliberately turned a blind eye to them. But because it is a class, you know, a product of class ideology, when you talk to people, you follow people, you know, the threats of the society, committing tiny crime, however small the degree of the crime is, they are punished for it. But the rich get away with it. So, the plague touches on many aspects of human, you know, society that we can see the situations clearly clear for what they are. The economic situations in the country and the rest of the world, we see the ongoing, you know, killings of Black Americans. It's another thing we would see. It's a societal thing we would see. What are we doing to recur this terrible situation? And to seriously suggest the play has presented the two sides of the cinema. And we can see a man who does the oppressing and a man who is oppressed. It is so ironic that French is a man who was initially oppressed when French liberated, also looks for a weaker group of people or a weaker person to oppress as well. He becomes a chain of reaction. Why are we like this? So, the play basically is a narrative of human tragedy, human condition, where we are kept in the world, and no one is completely and entirely sure of what is going to happen the next week, or the next minute, or the next second. It's so easy to take away human life. It's so easy to destroy what we cannot replace. We must not be like this. And I like the encouragement from the protagonist, Matsuki, who keeps encouraging us in his own small way that we must not stop talking about this, you know, terrible situation that we are in. And the moment we stop talking about them, things begin to die. This is part of why I'm interested in going to where there is silence and to find out why there is silence. I am interested in knowing why human beings behave the way they behave. Why people respond the way they do under oppression. And I am glad that I have enough in my body to write this. Because a radical writing like this is our own salvation. This book is our own salvation. And writing it is one of the highlights in my own life. Thank you. So, what inspired you to write this play? Yeah, basically I think I would like to say two things inspired me. And these two things that inspired me came from multiple writers like late Martin Goldman and the Indian American writer, Henry Sandcat. For Martin Goldman, she said that the best way a writer can serve a revolution is to write as well as she can. And again, Henry Sandcat talked about three kinds of death. One when our breath leaves, kind of body to return the air. One when our body is put back into the earth. And one when we are completely raised and no one remembers us at all. So, basically, I have always wanted to say revolution. And I also thought the question of immortality that has to do with, you know, the version of every time the card. So Because I wanted to start a revolution to begin with life for demand, I decided to develop my writing skills to write as well as I can to set a revolutionary record. And today, we can see that that road is not just only in Nigerian story, it is the narrative of the entire world. And about immortality, I have asked myself this question, how would I want to be remembered when I'm gone? What would I be known for? And I quickly thought of writing. And the only way to immortalize my name is to write. But I will not be completely forgotten in a conflict. So I was inspired by these two statements, by these notable writers from different, you know, parts of the world. The more so that I have found the voice of my conscience in the work of imagination, I decided to write this reality into fiction in a way that we can dramatize it, we can reimagine it, to see who we are and what we are, and the kind of species we are. We say we are civilized. How can civilized people take what they can't give? How can civilized people devise a means of grace for the civilized people? Is that what we call civilization? It's the belief. It's nonsense, not a nonsense. That has no meaning in the vocabulary of civilized culture. So I feel terribly sad, particularly about the situation in my country today. The economic hardship, the political marginalization, they are such a tribally divided society. And that should, of course, worry everybody. That we shouldn't know. So for these two reasons, I was inspired. And to add to that, Willie Shankar, the first mother laureate in South Africa, had never defeated from the path of truth and justice. So I read about him, what inspired him to be the radical writer that he is today. And I decided to follow, to emulate his work. Because I joined him in the 1970s when the Indian was terrorizing Uganda and other parts of the continent. Most African critics were silent or minimal about the territory of Indian. But Willie Soyinka relentlessly criticized him, campaigned against him, caused the international community to pull down Idi Amin's regime. So when that was successfully done, black civil rights leaders such as Colin Bennett had to criticize and accuse the solution of race betrayal. And I like his response to his critics at the time. That criticism, like charity, became essential. So I've always looked inward to criticize and perhaps to offer solution when necessary, to correct the wrong in my society, to say we can be better if we go this way, to say we can be better if we do that way. So this is my own kind of writing. It's a dangerous time. But if you're not careful, you can be brought down. Thank you. Great job. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you.
How did you become a writer?
Yeah, I became a writer by reading books of African writers, different generation writers, such as Wode Soyinka, Fabiola mentioned, lead to actually the author of things on the planet. They also had Musenge Mishani from South Africa. And this author, Gabriel Mara, Tambuzo Marashiro. Yeah. I read quite a lot in my college days, in my high school, if you like. I read William Shakespeare, read Robert Frost, an American poet, and some other Caribbean writers, like Walter Anthony Robbins. So I became a writer by first reading all these writers to see what inspired them. And by reading them, I was like an apprentice at the time. So I was basically in the cloud, acting my own play without a stage. So when I eventually graduated from the apprenticeship, I could not find my feet in the writing career to write my own play, to write my own critical book. My first book, of course, How Africans Live in South Africa, which is a rejoinder to late Walter Anthony Robbins, the finest Ghanaian historian I've ever read in my life. I responded to him from the post-colonial perspective, simply because the African world has changed drastically. A new African thinker has been asking one central question: what are you doing with the independence? Are you using the independence to betray your nation? Are you using the independence to equip yourself and enslave other people, other African people? What do you really with the independence? So having read those lines, I decided to write the way I did today. Because I find my salvation in telling the truth. I find my peace in telling the truth. You will be judged against me. Who is one of the authors to the influence of your life? Okay. This is what I have to say. I've actually looked up to before I looked up to writers in the past. As I have mentioned earlier, Marvin Dumont, the Malaysian character, and Henry Steady character. The Caribbean teacher and late Walter Anthony Robbins. Robert Frost, Gabriel Marshall Mackay, Wigan, Jan Tambuzo, Oswald Musenge Mishani, and of course, late Pacific, whose text and the foundations of my PhD thesis today were broadly influenced by, I was influenced by, Germany. I'm glad I have become an established playwright, as well as critic, having critical of my own national government, I can say I've been, because of them, because they appear to be revolutionary writers. I recall myself revolutionary in my thinking and paradigm because of their influences on me. Some people have looked at me as a left-wing writer, a rebel, and I was sent as a good cause. Thank you.
Do you have any advice for other writers, particularly young writers?
Yeah, I should, I think. We are not age, computer age, unlike the Iran first generation right now. In Africa, when after the demise of colonialism, foreign publishers were all over Africa looking for writers, emerging writers at the time to publish. They had very huge opportunity because publishers were dead for them. But we are in a competitive world today. Grossly capitalist in our look, and really need to work out to become outstanding. The publishers are dead, but they are not just stretching their hands for you to deliver a manuscript to be published, freely like it were in the past. So just as I was talking about apprenticeship, writing could be a gift and could be an art to be learned. As a beauty comes naturally, if you don't need any to undergo an apprenticeship, you can write creatively as you like. But as an act, you need to emulate, you need to read other writers to see their own style of writing, to see the way they use fiction, to see the way they bring to page their own experience, and to see what you can learn, what you can take, and what you cannot take. By the time you are able to put these two aspects together, if you've got a gift, could you keep? Then, as an art, if you master the skills and bring these two aspects of writing together, I'm sure you will do. And you cannot just start that way, it has to do with discipline again. You must, of course, discipline yourself to be a good reader, because a good writer is a good reader. Like me, for instance, I read for rationality, I read aggressively. Read anything that comes from not to the books that have to do with my discipline, post-colonial literature now, anything that comes from, because you need to develop your vocabulary, to write simply, to write freely, not to lack what to say. Because writing should be a continuous exercise, a continuous, requirement, rather than the final one. And it's good for us to write every day creatively, rather than write once in a lifetime. So we need, your writers need, count themselves down, to equip themselves with the necessary skills, to say, oh, I think I can try my hand at that. And it's also important to know what you want to write, to know your subject, what are we going to say, what are God's self-want, what's self-interest, how different is it. And even if it is not different, how unique can you create your own to be your own? because she mentioned criticism, economic intelligence of Chino Bangladesh. We talked about the danger of civility. She met up with her in the book as a kind of contemporary during the African Canal. The human story is that in Africa, in Latin America, Europe, just all of what's your approach to how you craft your own literature? The language you use to deploy to tell your roots. If it is an organizing to me like mine, how have I created us to uniquely be my own? That was important. Yeah, in closing, I would like to end up this conversation by memorably quoting the Jamaican writer Patrick Wilmot, because not many people like the kind of writing they're doing. Because in our lifetime, in a good day, in Nigeria, when he was teaching at the University of Nigeria, he came up with this memory, you know, food for thought, but how seriously inspired. And I would like to quote it here. Now, all I have trying to do is to hold up in you for you to see your own reflection. If you analyze what you have seen, breaking the mirror will not change anything without cutting off my arm. Killing me will even change things. The truth of the man cannot be dissolved in his own blood. Thank you very much.
That was playwright Joshua Ogbo discussing his drama, Deadwood. Thanks for listening to SBPRA Radio, and remember to read on.